as always, recording whenever we have a minute to breathe. Pitching to Contact is back. My name is Rich. I am joined by Payne Trawick. No Pete Horner this week. Dude, it kind of seems like we record now every blue moon. But Payne, how's it going, my man?
I'm doing really well, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm kind of stressed. Like, I'm up here in Toronto. The NBA finals start tomorrow. So I'm just kind of wasting my time however I can, trying to not think about the Golden State Warriors. But over the past like 48 hours, I'm doing a little bit of everything, watching every single practice video, every single finals interview, trying to see what's happening with Kevin Durant. I'm freaking out, dude. So I'm just trying to fill my time as best as I can. Work, podcasting, just anything imaginable, just trying to survive until 9 p.m. tomorrow. But anyways, for anyone wondering about Pete, he's Mr. Big Shot right now. He's down in Georgia coaching at the Coastal Plains League. I'm pretty sure that's in Georgia, but I might be wrong. But anyways, he's not here to really correct me. So RIP Pete, he will be missed. As far as this episode, lots to talk about. We're going to be talking MLB draft. We're going to be talking Carter Stewart. And we're going to be joined by a special guest this week, Jason Panini of Prospect Live. Jason, how are you? Thank you for coming on.
Hey, I'm doing well. Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's awesome. And first off, are you watching the NBA Finals at all?
I'm not a big basketball guy, to be honest. Everyone from back in Boston would be scolding me for that answer. I should be a Celtics fan, but I don't follow basketball. I've just, the last few years, the obsession with baseball has just grown, and all I really have time for anymore is I squeeze a little bit of football and following my Patriots in each fall. And yeah, I've kind of removed all other sports except for baseball and a little bit of football. So I used to be a more well-rounded sports fan, but not anymore.
And I'm just guessing, being from Boston, you're probably kind of bored of watching teams win, so you're just sticking to baseball from now on, right?
We're a bunch of spoiled. Can I swear on this podcast?
Oh yeah, go for it. Only our moms listen to this podcast anyways. Go for it.
We're a bunch of spoiled assholes. I'm kind of, this is going to sound weird, I'm looking forward to a time when we lose a little bit so the bandwagon gets a little lighter.
Jesus, I can't stand you guys. Payne's also a Boston Red Sox fan. Like, I hope you guys understand that when the Raptors play in a finals game tomorrow, that's the first time in my lifetime that a major sports team in Toronto has played in the finals. Like, this is making me feel horrible.
I know, and we're all assholes. We're kind of sore winners, you know. Have you heard that expression?
Toronto, no. Not in Toronto. And Payne was actually just complaining to me about how brutal the Boston Red Sox bullpen is. And I'm just like,
that's horrible.
Dude, the entire Blue Jays team is horrible right now. Like, cry me a river.
Yeah, we've got Dombrowski saying nothing's wrong. And we literally can't hold a 5-run lead if we wanted to. It's not going well.
See, at least you guys have a lead, because the Blue Jays struggle with it. But at least we have everybody coming up from the minor leagues right now. Like, I believe half of our roster at this point was in the minor leagues last year. So that's kind of how we're doing up here in the North. But anyways, just to kind of shift the focus to what matters, the MLB draft is next week. All of the conference tournaments are all done with. June 3rd to the 5th, MLB draft. And something I noticed last year, something a lot of people noticed last year, is that last year's draft was very heavy on prep arms. That was the big story coming out of that draft. Kumar Rocker, Ethan Hankins. Blue Jays picked up Adam Klofenstein last year in the second or third round, I believe. This year, it seems like everything's more centered around college bats. And when we talk about college bats in the 2019 MLB draft, every conversation starts with one person, and that's Adley Rutschman. And I know, Jason, you've seen a bunch of these guys. Let's start off with Adley. Is this guy the consensus number one pick? Is there no doubt in anybody's mind that he's going number one overall?
I think he is the consensus number one. I mean, the special thing about Rutschman is you're getting a well-rounded player, and there are other guys who are talented bats in this draft too, but I don't think the defense is on par with what you're going to get with Rutschman's defensive package. I guess we can talk about the bat first. I saw Rutschman in a game at Surprise Stadium back in Arizona, and they're playing Nebraska in a doubleheader, and he homered from both sides of the plate. So this guy's he's a powerful switch hitter, really strong hips. Like, you can almost just, you can see the torque unload in his swing as he brings his bat through the zone. Really effective use of his lower half, and the swing is remarkably similar from both sides of the plate. You know, some guys have kind of their maybe one side of the plate is, well, to be honest, I don't know what his season long splits look like, but you know, one side of the plate is kind of their contact side and the other is their power side. I don't think that's the case with him. I think he's just really good from both sides. And defensively, pretty nimble feet, good arm. I had him a 1-9 throw to second. He checked about every box you'd want to check. And I don't think there is a question. He should be the number one pick coming up. I think plenty of Baltimore fans have been on this guy for a while. Luke Seiler, who's one of the Baltimore guys on Twitter, has been, I think every time I tweeted something about Rutschman, he was retweeting it, and they know what's up over there, and they're going to have a special player. I was asked what I thought the offensive upside for Rutschman would be, and my response is what we thought Matt Wieters would be. Like, this guy could potentially be the best offensive catcher in the majors. I mean, that's his ceiling. Will he get there? You know, maybe. I like his chances. He's an exciting player, and if he's going 1-1, that's kind of what you're hoping for. But yeah, I mean, I think really it's a defense that differentiates him from some of the other guys, you know, at the top of this board. And that's not to say that they're not, you know, cromulent defensive players at their respective positions, but I think Rutschman is a cut above what the other guys project to produce defensively.
For sure. And I think when it comes to a guy like Rutschman, obviously defensively, he grades out with a plus arm. You mentioned the pop time. I don't think defensively he's as good as a guy like Shea Langille. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. Penn, do you mind helping me out with his last name?
I think it's Langilliers.
There we go, prospects. But the Baylor kid, obviously defensively he looks like the better package, but like you said, the bat is legit. And mixing it in what he does behind the plate, and I think he's going to improve as a framer. I think he has the athleticism to become a very, very good defensive catcher on the next level. And the fact is, you get a catcher who can hit for power from both sides and play behind home plate, that's a first overall pick. And you just look at his numbers all across the board. I think this season he hit over 400 for Oregon State. This kid is a legit talent. And I was actually going to ask you, Jason, because this is a conversation I've had with multiple people over the past couple of months. Just screwing everything aside, like amateur, professional, doesn't matter. Do you think a guy like Adley is already a top 100 prospect in the game of baseball? And where does he even rank right now amongst catchers in the game? Because obviously there's Joey Bart. Obviously there's Danny Jansen, who's kind of laying a goose egg offensively right now with the Blue Jays. But where do you really see a guy like Adley in these rankings?
That's an interesting question, and it just sort of makes me think back to last year's draft class and then the subsequent top 100 lists that came out, and you know how many of those guys slotted into like the top 100 lists, you know, for the next iteration. And I think he would slot into a top 100 prospect list, maybe somewhere around 50, somewhere in the 50s. I mean, he's not proven within the minor leagues, but this is, I mean, he's going to go very much, he's very likely going to go 1-1. And I don't see a lot of deficiencies in his game. He's such a well-rounded prospect that even if he gets drafted 1-1 and kind of has a mediocre start to his professional career, I still think you're going to see him aggressively ranked in 2020 top 100 lists. And, you know, if he doesn't perform in his pro debut, I wouldn't even be worried about it. Well, part of it is how, the reason he doesn't perform, but I think there's a good chance he's something like a top 50 prospect right now.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask this. So I'm very much on board with Adley being the consensus number one pick. I think, you know, all around there hasn't been a catcher that's come out of the draft in a long time that possesses as much talent he has, especially his ability to barrel up the ball consistently and have such good control of the zone. Now, is there an argument, and Jason, Rich, both of you guys could touch on this if you want. Is there an argument for Bobby Witt Jr. to jump him at one? Because to me, I'm not as sold on Bobby Witt as everybody else is. He hasn't really performed consistent enough for me. I mean, granted, he's still in high school, so that's kind of me taking the whole projectability side out of it. But so is there any kind of argument that you guys could make for Bobby to jump him at one at this point? Or is it, you know, it just kind of looking at what Baltimore's needs are and they have to take the best player available?
Mm-hmm. If I can just take this question first, I think with Bobby Witt, you really nailed, you hit the nail on the head. The fact is he hasn't performed consistently. And I spoke to a couple of scouts down south that said there are tournaments or showcases where you see him and this guy's just completely blows your mind with some of the tools and the projections, and he can just go at a certain tournament and just get a hit every single at bat. But then you see him at another showcase or at another tournament and you don't even know that he's there. So I think it's just that track record isn't there. And the fact that with Adley Rutschman, you get a catcher, you get an athlete, you get a catcher who can swing it from both sides with power, who can call a game, who can play behind home plate. I just think there's just so much there that you can't really pass up on a guy like that. This could be a generational player if everything works out. And obviously, I've talked to, for example, with Lance Rozdowski, who also writes for Prospect Live. I've talked to him a lot about projecting catchers, and him and I agree that projecting catchers is always a difficult thing to do. But I think with a guy like Adley Rutschman, I'm pretty certain that this dude is legit. Like, I asked Jason the question of where he would put him in the top 100 rankings right now across all of baseball. I would put him somewhere between 30 and 50 right now just because of how good he is and how great the tools are all across the board. Would you not agree, Jason?
Yeah, I think that's generally sound reasoning. Like, when I look at the two guys you mentioned, like, Bobby Witt does do some amazing things. I saw this guy just hit a majestic home run out of Wrigley Field during the Under Armour game last year, like literally out of the ballpark. The raw power is sublime and ridiculous. I know I have talked to people that some people think potentially he might move to third. I don't know if that's the prevailing opinion among most evaluators. It's an opinion I've heard from some people. I think in general, the high school kid is just going to be more risky than the college kid. And I see players that both play premium positions, both have immense offensive upside. But for me, there's just less risk associated with Rutschman. And that's the reason that I would go for him.
Mm-hmm. And even when we just watched last year, in the last year's draft, I know Peyton and I are just in love with Jarrett Kelenic, and I don't think he was taken until like the sixth overall pick by the Mets. And we just saw Casey Mize get taken first, Joey Bart gets taken second. And the theme right there is that both these guys are just, they're there. They're more polished than anybody else in the draft. They're almost ready. And like Casey Mize, right now you watch him in the minors and he's just kind of hanging in there. But realistically, he should already be pitching on an MLB roster. Joey Bart is incredibly good. And I think he might have gotten hurt this year. I'm not certain. But just before he got hurt, he looked legit. And he looked so close to just getting that call up. Like he's ready to be on an MLB roster. And I think that's the case with a guy like Adley Rutschman, that when he makes it to the MLB, I think that whatever team drafts him, and I'm guessing it's going to be Baltimore, they can just flip him really quickly and have him come up to the main roster very quickly. As but as far as a call a high school arm a high school but bat like with like Bobby Witt, you're just not really certain how long it's going to take, even though he shows the tools and he shows the power. And I mean, I think this is a safe pick. And for a team like Baltimore, you might have to go with the safe pick as well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, safe doesn't necessarily imply low upside either. I mean, Rutschman has tons of upside in his own right. So I don't necessarily love the connotation with safe, yeah, but it is a safe pick. Like, and I think front offices tend to be risk averse, and that's why you do see a lot of college guys taken early. Maybe if there's a coin flip between two guys, you take the safer guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let me ask this. So let's say that Mize and Rutschman are in the same draft class. Which one would you guys go with?
I guess for me, it really depends on need, right? Because both guys are just so close to being ready. I guess it's the most important thing there is what a team values more, a pitcher or a catcher, and I guess where a team is lacking more in their farm. You know, like Casey Mize has shown that he's incredible. Like he threw a no hitter, his stuff is incredible. His splitter is probably one of the best secondary pitches in entire minors. But then again, with a guy like Adley, the tools just jump off the page, right? So I think it's a question of need and a question of just what a team prioritizes, you know, a bat or an arm, you know? What do you think, Jason?
This is a hard question for me. I feel torn in a couple directions for a couple reasons. And part of me wants to say, take the catcher because Mize has pitcher risk, which is just like anyone can go down with injury at any time. You never know who's going to blow an elbow. And then another part of me says, take Mize. Like he's somewhat proven in the minor leagues already. You don't know, like as much as you love Rutschman, I mean, nothing's a guarantee, right? And Mize is, he's already really shoving in the minors, and he made high A look like a joke, and he's really already performing extremely well. The other thing that I think about is I like to think about more macro level trends in the game. And for example, teams are, you know, some teams are switching to more of this opener model where maybe you only need four starting pitchers in your rotation. And I think if this becomes a more widespread trend in MLB, then that actually puts more value on frontline starting pitching because there's going to be fewer guys. And I'm sure if you look at the numbers, they'll back this up too. But each year there's fewer and fewer guys that throw 200 innings a year. So if you have one of those guys, to me, they're more valuable. I really struggle with this question. I think I would take Mize because for me, I think he will be one of those ace type starting pitchers that you can rely on. And if he is that, you have something special. You have something that I think in the way the game is trending, maybe even more valuable than a stud position player. He's a pitcher and at any moment he can go down. I guess I'd stick with Mize, but I'm really torn in a couple of ways by that question.
But just speaking of Adley and college bats, there are other big names that are projected to go within the top 10. And I like to look at a lot of mock drafts leading up to the draft. And I know Keith Law even put in his piece that somebody might take the first overall pick away from Adley, and that's Andrew Vaughn, a Cal kid. And other than Vaughn, obviously there's Bode and Bishop. But it seems like those three names are just the next three college bats that are set to go and potentially all top five picks in this draft. And my quick opinion on the two outfielders is Blade seems like he's one of the best college bats in the entire country. And by that, I mean just one of the best pure hitters in the country. Meanwhile, a guy like Hunter Bishop seems like, to me, he's the type of talent that teams would probably love to dream about because of the upside, because of the power, because of the athleticism. Blade has the track record, but a guy like Bishop just has the insane tools. It's just like similar to Ali, just jump off the page. So I guess the question I have for both of you guys, and we'll start with Jason, because I believe you've seen both of these players play. Between a guy like Blade and Bishop, where do you kind of go with if you're a team? Do you go for polish or do you go for just insane tools and upside?
Man, that's a hard question too. So just some background info. I'm out in Arizona. I've seen Hunter Bishop many times, probably, 10 or 12 times this spring. And Blade, Vanderbilt was out here early season for, they had this kind of opening weekend tournament, and Vanderbilt was one of the teams. So I caught Blade, I think two or three times that weekend when they're out here. And I, in general, I have a better feel for Bishop because I've seen him more, but I think I would take Blade. And the reason I'm saying that is I think Bishop does have some deficiencies in his game. And that's not to say I don't love him as a player, but defensively there's some kind of weird routes that he takes. You know, I don't think he's a very instinctive defensive player. Like, you will see a few like standout great catches that he makes, but at other times I see him and I'm like, that was an odd pass he took to the ball. His weakest tool is probably his arm, which I've heard some people put a 30 on. I thought it was more like a 40, but there are evaluators out there that believe that's a really limiting factor. Like, they're pretty convinced that despite what is plus speed, I mean, I've had this guy 4-1 down the line. A lot of people think he's destined for left field anyways. And I saw Blade play. No, he's not as flashy, but I thought the arm was pretty good. Like, I think he's probably someone that's going to stick in right field. So that was one factor I considered. You talked about the track record with Blade versus Hunter Bishop. And, you know, I think Bishop's done a lot of good things this year. And I haven't been following his career a long time, but I've talked to even fans or people in the stands and asked them like, hey, like, what did you think about Bishop last year? Like, why, when I talked to scouts at the beginning of the season, did they say this guy projects to be a third round pick and now he's probably a top 10 pick? And, you know, I think it really stemmed from swing and miss in his game last year. And I've seen a lot of good things with Bishop in terms of I really like how he can keep his hands inside. And I've seen, despite the fact he's a fairly tall kid with long limbs, I think he's listed at 6'4", supreme athlete. But when there's ever a guy 6'4", 6'5", I think there are long limbs to be exposed. Like, there's going to be some degree of swing and miss no matter what, just due to length in the swing. And that's not even necessarily a result of mechanical deficiency or anything like that. But if you got long arms, it makes your swing long no matter what. And that's just sort of the nature of the beast. And I've seen Bishop do a great job of kind of tucking his hands closer to his body and getting around on inside pitches. And I've also seen him go opposite way, and he has immense power. And I saw a lot of good things from him this year. The other thing I wanted to bring up was I think the ball flies out here in Arizona, and I've seen several home runs where it kind of looked like a fly ball and just kept going type of thing. And, I haven't been in person for all of Bishop's home runs, but there have been no doubters, but there have also been at least a few that were, you know, more of the that was a fly ball that carried out type. And again, that's not to say I don't like Bishop. I do like the guy a lot, but I just saw maybe this is a byproduct of me seeing him more and being able to nitpick him. Whereas with Blade, I only saw him a couple times, and these type of little things I wouldn't have noticed in a short look. And I would have, you know, I was able to pick up on having seen Bishop 12 times or however many times. So yeah, I guess for me, I'd rather take the little more established guy who I think has a rosier defensive projection over the kind of sexy upside guy, who has like a few little things that I could nitpick him on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the thing,
did I answer the question? I just sort of rambled for 5 minutes.
Oh no, that's totally fine. You did eventually get the question, but that was actually probably the most perfect analysis we could get on both of those guys.
All right, cool.
Yeah. And the thing with Bishop for me, you know, when I watch him play, you know, if we were talking like a first or second pick in the draft, I would probably go with Blade, you know, considering if it's like Adley through Abrams, including Vaughn and Witt, like weren't there. Let's just say those four guys weren't on the board, you know, and Blade and Bishop were between the top two picks. To me, I go with Bishop because I like the upside, you know, the power of the ball just jumps off his bat. I think he'll stick in center field. That's just me personally. But the only thing, you know, once again, a lot of people talk about, you know, the lack of like his track record, you know, there's a lot of inconsistency and that's one thing for me that I've really struggled to get past. But at the same time, like I saw Blade play this year and I just wasn't too impressed. Like, I mean, he's a good ball player. I think maybe it's the flash. Like he just seems like he blended in, you know, real toolsy. You know, but like you say, he's not real flashy. And I just worry that, you know, without the run tool, you know, I mean, he'll probably stick. I mean, I don't know where you guys think he'll play at the next level, but I think the fielding is grades out about a 45 or a 50. So, I mean, it's not anything that's going to blow you away. So in the event that for some reason he didn't hit, he turns into an average prospect really fast with just plus plus power. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's a lot easier for me to take a risk on Bishop than to play it safe with Blade just based on those things. Because like I said, I'm just not too impressed with him. I don't know what it is. You know, and I think everybody has a prospect that they look at and they're just not too sure about. And for me, it's got to be JJ.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, as well, with a guy like Blade, I just think the track record speaks for itself. And he's a Vandy kid. He's playing in the SEC, which is probably the best conference in college baseball. And you just see how he improves every single year. And you just see the power start to come this year as well. And just in my mind, other than Adley and maybe Vaughn, he's probably the most purest hitter in this class, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I would agree with that.
Yeah, and then when you look at a guy like Hunter Bishop, it just he was on the Cape, he wasn't good. Every year he just wasn't that good, and then this year he just completely blows up. And I remember I was watching video of this kid, and this was just 2 weeks ago when I just sat down and started watching video of Hunter Bishop, and the very first thing I see is the ball just fly off his bat. And I just watched that like over and over again. And I'm like, holy shit. Like I just watched Vladdy hit home runs. And then I see this guy and I'm like, this is impressive. And that's just the type of flash that we all touched on that Bishop has. And I think it's kind of like what I mentioned at the very beginning of this conversation, that he is the type of player that teams are going to just dream about and hope that he pans out and turns into a superstar. But then again, I personally, just like Payton, I think he might stay in center field because of the speed. And I obviously have questions about his arm, but I think there's athleticism and speed and range there that can help a guy like Bishop stick there. But a question I have for both of you guys, and feel free to jump on and answer this. We've kind of touched on this already. There's questions about how important track record is. And say you're an MLB team and the draft is coming up. How important do you guys think track record is? Because you look at like a Blade, track records there. Guy like Hunter Bishop, not so much. And then you just kind of look down the list, and there's, for example, Auburn has a kid, Will Holland, and he performed really, really well. And then this year he kind of stumbled. Or then you look at a guy like Logan Davidson with Clemson, who never really hit well with a wood bat, but you see that he has a track record of hitting with metal. So where do you think teams kind of value that when they come up with their decision coming into the draft?
Jason, do you want to go first, or?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it can kind of go both ways. And what I mean by that is there's some guys who might have like a limited track record. And I'm thinking of like someone like Seth Johnson, who I think he barely even pitched last year. Like I was looking at his one of his bio pages, and I think he only threw like 6 innings last season. And like for me, that actually makes him even more impressive if he barely threw last year and 2019 was his first, you know, full season as a pitcher. That makes me like a guy like Seth Johnson maybe even more than you would think, you know, based off of numbers he put up on this season. So to some degree, I think it can go both ways in terms of a short track record can be a good thing or a bad thing. But I think you meant this question was phrased in terms of like, you know, I think obviously you prefer to have a guy with both track record and performance. You know, how do you weigh that versus the pop-up guy who is extremely toolsy and sexy and could be a star versus the, you know, maybe less flashy player with the longer track record? Great question. I think it really depends. It's kind of player specific for me. Like you'd have to just give me 2 guys and then I'd have to weigh them against each other. I don't think there's a cut and dry rule for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And excuse me. So one thing I really want to think about here is, you know, when you look at high school players, I mean, they're going to be guys, like, they're still trying to develop. They might be, you know, the best at their high school, the best in their conference, the best just in their general area of the state, you know, however you want to look at it. But, you know, they're teenagers. You know, they're going to be inconsistent. They're going to struggle at times. You know, mentally, they might not be as mature. I mean, there's a different variety of things. And you look at a guy like, yeah, like Seth Johnson or maybe like a Jackson Rutledge, who didn't really get to play a lot his freshman year, transfers out, goes to a JUCO, and finally finds a little bit better of a stride. You could look at a guy, you know, I mean, just different high school kids. I mean, like a Quinn Priester, like he didn't really start climbing up draft boards until, what do you want to say, mid-March.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you have a guy like, you know, Zach Thompson from Kentucky, who's really pitched pretty well, you know, every year he's been at Kentucky. So, I mean, it just kind of depends on what you look for in a profile. With high school kids, I think you got to really throw that out the window. You know, going back to like that Bobby Wood Jr. point, you go to some tournaments and you can't even tell that he's there. And some tournaments he's, you know, he looks like the best player in the world. You know, there's going to be times where some of these kids are going to struggle, you know, and then you look at a guy like Blade, who's just been consistent all 3 years, might not have like the loudest tools, but he's a good all around ball player.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's definitely for each player, you have to kind of value and look at the risk reward kind of thing, like high risk on Hunter Bishop, you know, not as high of a risk on Blade, you know, like, because there's going to be guys, you know, like I said, they're going to climb up the board really late, you know, like Quinn Priester. I mean, he pitched Team USA, but, you know, he really didn't start climbing hard, like I said, until about March. So, I mean, it definitely depends on, like, what your draft strategy is. I think high school arms, you kind of have to throw that out the window, look at pure projectability, where more like on the college side, you have to kind of look at track record. And, you know, Seth Johnson's kind of a really rare entity itself, just because we haven't really seen anything like that before in terms of someone making, you know, a quick appearance to the mound for like his first season, you know, and he's got a 60 grade fastball and it plays really well. The slider, you know, the changeup, the curveball could use some work. But there's a lot of projectability there considering he's only been on the mound 1 year. So, I mean, you just have to kind of look at it every angle and kind of value what your draft strategy is and what you think you could develop the best. For me, track record, college is more track record oriented than high school.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. And you mentioned a guy like Seth Johnson, and I find that story so fascinating. And the fact that he plays a Campbell, like who comes out of Campbell and becomes a good player. A cool thing to know, just to kind of shout out Canada a little bit. There's a kid here on Ontario who's just really, really good. He's like this short, kind of like a light version of Dustin Pedroia without the knee problems. He's committed to Campbell next year. So that's an exciting kid to watch moving forward. But in terms of Seth Johnson, like you said, Payne, he didn't really pitch a lot, low mileage arm. But one thing I noticed just when I scout and when I go out to games, the one thing I love looking at is just how easy things look on the baseball field. And with a guy like Seth Johnson, I'm watching him pitch, and obviously he doesn't have a lot of experience being on the mound yet. It's up to 97, 98, and it's effortless. Everything looks so effortless for him on the mound. Like the delivery, it's clean. It all comes out easy. Like the ball looks good out of his hands. And obviously some of the numbers from his year aren't that good because he just hasn't pitched that well and the control is not there yet and the secondary stuff is not that established just yet. But what do you guys, just your overall feeling about a guy like Seth Johnson? Like this is a scenario that's really not often come across in the MLB draft. And Jason, I know you've seen him a couple of times. What do you think of a guy like Seth Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I saw Seth Johnson once. I was in the Carolinas for the NHSI tournament, and he just happened to be pitching in Shelby, which was like 3 hours away. So I was able to get a ride with a couple of draft guys, Burke Granger and Brian Sikowski, and I just kind of hitched on with them and got a ride over to Shelby, and we were watching the game together. And I like Seth Johnson. There were definitely things about his game that weren't super polished. Like I didn't think his sequencing, for example, was something that I thought could use work, which made sense because I didn't even realize he had such a limited track record pitching. But I also liked his ability to kind of play the fastball has some run to it. And I think Peyton, you already mentioned this, but the slider and fastball just pair pretty well together. He didn't throw a lot of changeups the start that I saw, but I thought that changeup actually looked pretty effective at times. It was inconsistent, but I thought it flashed as good as 55, maybe 60. And on a swing basis, he was getting good swing and miss on his changeup. And I think that's a pitch that could be huge for him. And it's usually the, you know, last pitch to come along for guys that are new to the position. So I like Seth Johnson a lot. Like you said, I'm actually looking in my notes right now, and this guy just has a really like well-proportioned athletic frame. The arm action's clean. Uses lower half well. Like he was checking a lot of boxes for me. And, you know, Sikowski posed a question to me. He said, you know, if I saw this kid in a low A game, you know, how would I project him? Like, what would I rate him as, like, you know, in terms of his OFP and future value? And I said, I thought, you know, OFP wise, this guy could be a mid rotation starter and maybe future value, something like a 4 or 5. Like, so that's a pretty strong projection. And part of that is this guy is projectable, you know, in terms of being new to the position and learning how to getting better feel for his changeup and also learning to sequence and better attack hitters, which he clearly has the raw stuff to, you know, perform in the minors and work his way up the ladder. But for me, it's really those little things in terms of the projection and feel for pitching that make him an exciting and interesting prospect.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of makes me feel super shitty just hearing about players like Seth Johnson who don't really pitch but jump onto the mound and start throwing 98, because over here when I was in high school, I wasn't really ever a pitcher, but I dabbled as everybody does. And like right now I'm 24, I'm trying to pitch in beer league and I'm up to like 75, showing a good feel for a slider. One of my buddies on my team kind of taught me how to throw a changeup, and I'm feeling like the king of the world. And then this guy comes in and starts shoving 98. So that just kind of shows how much I suck at baseball and how good a lot of guys are down south in the States. But just let's switch over from the college side to the prep side, and let's talk about some bats first, and then we'll switch over to some arms. And a pitcher that hitter that I'm super interested in is Riley Green. And before I kind of give it over to you guys, this is my general thoughts about Riley Green, because for me, I think he falls out of the top 10 simply because I don't think there's anything there other than the hit tool. And with a guy like Riley Green, I feel like if a team believes that the power is legit and the power is going to come, that's the team that's going to select him. I personally don't know if it's ever going to come. I don't think he's an outfielder. I don't think the arm's there. I don't think the fielding is there. I just think he's a high school bat, and obviously probably the best high school bat in the class because of the hit tool. But then again, if you're an MLB, team, you're just kind of gambling on that one tool and hoping that it translates over into the MLB. So I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but with a guy like Riley Green, the hit tool looks legit, and I think it could translate over, but I just don't see anything else there. And that's my concern with this guy.
Yeah, and if I could actually take this one first, Jason, Richard and I had a really good conversation about this the other day, just about Riley Green in general, talking about like the power, you know, where he could play at the next level defensively. And we both kind of agreed that, you know, if the power doesn't come, that there's not a whole lot he could do. I mean, he'll be one of those guys that'll hit like 300 in the Texas League, but it won't ever get a call because he can't do anything else. He'll try to hide him somewhere, whether it's like at first base or maybe, I mean, the arm, I mean, really the only place it could play with his run tool would be in left if he stayed in the outfield. So, I mean, there's not a lot of different places you could put him and feel comfortable. Long term, I mean, the hit tool's there, 60, 65 grade power. I would give it currently a 45 or a 50, maybe the top out of 55 if he actually develops. So, I mean, for me personally, I was really high on him at the beginning of the year. I definitely think he could fall out or will fall out of the top 10, just because I just don't think there's enough teams inside the top 10 that want to risk his power not developing when there's guys like, you know, Lodola, and then, you know, like Langley or Manoa, you know, Stott, just people like that that are still available and have a little bit higher of a ceiling.
Yeah, and also, Jason, before you go, let's also remember that he's a Florida kid who's committed to Florida, and Florida has a long track record of developing good hitters. And like Brady McConnell is a name right now, Jonathan India. There's a ton of guys who have come out of Florida and have really impressed on the minor league level. So signability might also be a pretty big issue with a guy like Riley Green.
Yeah, I caught this kid a little bit. He was part of NHSI, and he did not have a very good tournament out there. So I don't want to kill him for that, but I was just, you know, trying to grab open face video of this kid, and he really only had a couple of good swings for me like the entire tournament. And you could still see the bat speed there, and it's very evident. And I think he does have that raw power in there too. He was a part of the Under Armour game in Chicago last summer that I was able to see, and just seeing him take hacks during the batting practice. And he also homered in that game too, I think off Brendan Malone, if my memory serves correctly. There's definitely raw power there, and I think he's going to get to it in game. Like, I still really do believe in the bat. All of your concerns are, you know, I think, duly noted and important concerns. I don't think he moves particularly well in the outfield. It's a little bit of kind of uncoordinated, and I don't know how to describe him. He kind of this is going to sound harsh, but he sort of looked like a giraffe running around in the outfield.
There we go.
Like just not super coordinated, and the arm was maybe 40 grade, something like that. It wasn't great. So it's probably left field or nothing, and that's a lot of pressure tied up with the bat. And
for sure,
like I said before, you know, like high school kids are inherently risky. So even if he is the, you know, consensus top prep bat, I think there still is some risk there. Like, I'd be curious to look through like the previous 10 drafts and look at who was the top high school bat in all of those drafts, and, you know, how did they fare, you know, professionally going forward. And I think it would be a fun exercise. And if I was thinking of picking Riley Green, that's something I'd definitely look at before making mm-hmm. that selection.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And just staying on the topic of high school bats, while Riley Green is a guy that I'm not really high on, a name that I'm just really in love with right now is Corbin Carroll. And I saw him I watched an entire PG All American game, and he looked phenomenal. Watched a ton of PBR video of him, watched a ton of perfect game video of him. Undersized kid, but I think the tools play. I think they're good tools all across the board. Maybe not power, but like the kid can hit. He looks like a ball player. And that's something, like, for example, when I watch a guy like CJ Abrams play, that kid looks like a ball player. He has the instincts of a ball player, like a guy who's just been there, just playing for a very long time, and a guy who makes the game look so easy. And that's what I kind of see with Corbin Carroll. I think the kid's going to hit. I think there's a lot to dream of with this kid. And I think this guy might be a steal in the first round. And I wouldn't even be surprised to see him go in the top 10. I think there's a lot of helium in this player. And I think this guy's going to get a lot of love come next week. What do you guys think? And I let's start off with Jason with this one. I'm just really, really hoping that you feel the same way about this guy, because I love Corbin Carroll.
Yeah, I was a big fan of him too, going back to last summer. He was also part of that Under Armour game I keep referencing, and, you know, double plus runner. I think he's a center field stick for me. He's just an exciting all around player. Great hands, great bat speed. I keep seeing all these videos pop up on Twitter of him like hitting really impressive home runs, and maybe the power isn't on par with someone like Bobby Witt, but this isn't going to be like a leadoff hitter type with no power. Like, he is at least 50, and I think it might even grow into plus power. I'm super excited for this kid. I loved what I saw in the Under Armour workouts and the Under Armour game itself. He's exciting. And he was one of the players I wrote up pretty aggressively. I really like this kid.
Mm-hmm. And just one thing about Carroll, like when I said power, there is some sneaky pop there, but when I watch him, and you guys might appreciate this because both of you guys like the shitty Red Sox, but he kind of looks to me a little bit like Andrew Benintendi when I watch him play. That's what I think of when I watch him. And Peyton, and just I loved Andrew Benintendi coming up, and just when he came up with the Red Sox, I thought this guy's gonna be just a rookie of the year. I thought he was gonna just blow up over Aaron Judge, and I still love him a lot. And that's kind of what I see with a guy like Corbin Carroll. Peyton, do you kind of see that comparison a little bit?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, that's a really good comp for me. I mean, in terms of, you know, what the kid looks like. I wouldn't necessarily go as far to say it's like they'll be the same player, but I think, you know, that assessment is, you know, fair. I mean, the thing with me is the arm, which I don't know. That's not really a worry, though, when you think about all the other tools he brings and, you know, just his ability to play and his feel, you know, not only at the plate, you know, and he's got some surprising pop. I don't know what it is about him. Like, there's just something that kind of worries me. You know, I think, like I said earlier, everybody has a couple players where they know they're going to be good, but there's just something they don't like about them. And we've had this conversation on a previous pod, pretty similar to like what I'm saying. And then I think he'll be a really good defender in center field.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There's just something. I think it's the arm that kind of concerns me more than anything. But, I mean, even still, it's not really a concern. It's not like, you know, he deserves to fall because of his arm. Like, the kid's got a 60-grade hit tool. I think he could develop a little bit more power. Because, I mean, he's only sitting at, like, 165 right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I think he's going to be a power bat? No, but he'll have a little bit of pop to him. So I like him. I think the run tool and the run and hit tool combination with him is probably the best in the draft.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And as we kind of close this episode out, I want to touch on some high school arms. And obviously, Peyton, you and I really, really love Quinn Priester. I'm also a big fan of Matthew Allen. I'm a little petrified of guys like Daniel Espino, and just based on the scouts I've talked to, it seems like it's kind of like on one side of the fence that people love him. On the other side of the fence, people are just so scared of this kid, thinking the arm's going to blow out. But a couple of other high school arms that I've found just really fascinating to watch. One is Brennan Malone, and another one is Jack Leiter. So he got some MLB blood in him. But starting off with Brennan Malone, and just speaking to some of the scouts that I know, people love Brennan Malone just because of the athlete that he is on the mound. I know Payne and I have put together a little bit of a mock draft, and I think we have him going somewhere around 15 to the Angels just because of their love for athletes. But what do you guys kind of think? And we'll start off with you, Jason. Like, the thing with Brennan with me is just the fastball's there. The athleticism is something I love. And I think the secondary stuff is going to come as well, and the control is going to come because he's just such a great athlete on the mound that I think that everything's just going to translate over to turning him into a pretty good pitcher on the next level.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this with Seth Johnson too, and just ease of delivery, and that's something I see with Malone too. I look at his mechanics, and I just see very strong balance, like the head doesn't move a lot, and just good posture through his release. The arm action looks pretty clean, and I look at the stuff, and I see three pitches that, you know, you could dream on being plus, and there just aren't that many guys out there like this. And he has the fastball velo, the slider and the curve, like both pitches. And I think if it all comes together, you're looking at a guy who has a shot to be like a number two starter type. And there aren't that many guys like this out there. So he's a super exciting guy. And I'm curious to see where he goes in this draft. Should be first round somewhere, I would think.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And honestly, the IMG Academy just creates so many good players. And like, there's another kid at IMG, another arm that Peyton and I just love, and Kendall Williams. But Peyton, what do you kind of think about Brennan Malone? And we'll jump into Jack Leiter, who's a kid that I think is going to go pretty high in this draft. And I think his stock has kind of gone up really, really quick this spring.
Yeah, I really like Brennan Malone. I think he's got the second best fastball slider combination in the draft behind Jackson Rutledge. The one thing I don't like about Rutledge is the arm action. I'm not too sold on that. It looks a little herky jerky to me. But yeah, back to Malone. With Malone, you know, like you said, he's an athlete. He has good feel for the changeup and the curve too. With, you know, I'd probably say 55 grade control. So I mean, the kid has a lot of good feel on the mound. He still has a little bit of room to develop at 6'3", 200. So I really like him. I think he could probably get the fastball up to about 70, 75 grade if he puts on, you know, as much muscle and develops. That's a little bit of a stretch, but I think that the athleticism is there with the plus stuff he already has. So, I mean, to me personally, I think he's one of, if not the best high school arm in the draft. I'm really high on him. You know, guys like Matthew Allen and, you know, Quinn Priester give him a little bit of run for his money. But I really like him. I've been pretty high on him all year.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And yeah, I agree with everything you guys said about Brennan Malone. But then a guy like Brennan Malone just kind of amazes you with stuff. But then you look at a guy like Jack Leiter, and he's kind of in the same class as like a JJ Goss because they both have that pitchability, which not a lot of high school arms have right now. And I think with Jack Leiter, you can just see that there's a lot in there. Like, he has four pitches that work. I think his fastball was up to 97 this spring, which is incredible. And you just see the pitchability is there. Like, he knows how to pitch. He's a competitor on the mound. Like, he has all of those intangibles that scouts really talk about. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jack Leiter kind of sneaks into the middle of the first round. I think there's a lot there. And as the only thing I have a question about is I'm pretty certain he has a pretty strong commitment with Vandy. But other than that, there's so much to love with a guy like Jack Leiter. And I think the projectability is there too. I think he still has a lot of growing to do. But let's start off with you, Payne, because I know you really love Jack Leiter. What are your thoughts about this dude?
Yeah. So he fastball's gotten up to about 97 this spring. He's flashed it a little bit. I think, you know, the breaking ball, you know, really good pitch. The only thing with me is I'm not as sold on his changeup as everybody else is. I think he could command four pitches really well. So, I mean, to me, like I said, the changeup, the only thing I'm not really sold on. I think he was another NHSI guy, if I remember correctly. There's so many people we've looked at, so I don't really remember if I'm accurate in that. I think the changeup does have good feel, but I think it's just a little inconsistent with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I struggle with Jack because the whole Vandy commit thing, and I'm not sure if you touched on that because I did lose you guys. He's pretty strong on his commitment to Vandy, so I think he might fall a little bit. I think it'd probably take someone reaching on him, you know, a little bit higher, maybe in probably in the top 20 for him not to sign, unless a team like the Diamondbacks get him because they have that, you know, that $3 extra million and nobody else has. So I think they would have to be someone like that that could maybe give him a little bit more money for him to sign. But I'm really high on Jack. I think he could develop a little bit more, you know, another 6 foot, not even at 200-pound kid. So he's going to add a little more muscle at frame. He'll get some more feel for all of his pitches if he gets to Vanderbilt. And I think we could be looking at a guy after 3 years at Vandy, or actually 2 years, because I think he'll be a draft-eligible sophomore. After 2 years at Vandy, he'd probably be a top 10 pick, maybe even sneak his way to the top five.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was exactly the team I was thinking of. The Arizona Diamondbacks is the type of team, because they have extra money, that have a chance to like steal these high school kids, like a Jerry O'Neely, who will probably go play football, or a Maurice Hampton, or a Jack Leiter. And I think I'm hoping Jack Leiter signs, because I think he's awesome and I don't want him to go to Vandy. I want to see him pitch in minor league ball. And who knows, maybe he'll go to Vandy and turn out like Kumar Rocker and just turn into complete shit at times. But Jason, what are your thoughts as we close this one out on Jack Leiter?
Well, I'm just ready to drop like a cross-racial comp here. I think the guy that he reminds me of when I look at him is Davey Garcia. And I see two guys who are not super big, but have crazy pitchability and just have mound presence. Like, they're kind of bulldogs, even though they're both guys who are on the smaller side. I think they both do a good job, like, working the full plate with their fastball and changing eye levels. And then also, kind of, they have this aptitude for missing in spots that, like, don't hurt them. And the fact that he was up to 97, like, really, I think that's crazy impressive. Yeah, you were right, Peyton. In the NHSI, he was out there, and I had him. He was mostly 90 to 93, but in pivotal moments, he would jack up the velo to like 94, 95. So there was a sense that I got that he kind of had it and was saving it in the reserves for moments that really mattered. I obviously really liked his curveball. That was just a filthy pitch. And I agree with you guys. The change was okay. I think it was mostly effective just because Leiter has this great ability to sequence and keep hitters off balance. But it didn't really stand out to me in terms of movement or even velo differential to the fastball. Like, I had the change. I wrote in my notes, change two seam. I didn't really know what it was. So it was like 88 to 90, like in that range. So it wasn't really that far off of his fastball. So, I mean, it was still an effective pitch, as was his slider, but more so in the sense that he just had really good command and good feel for everything he was doing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I like this kid a lot. I don't know if he – I don't think – honestly, I don't think he should go middle of the first because, you know, I was thinking back to last year's draft and guys who went in that range, like Cole Wynn, Matthew Liberatore, I think a little more highly of them as pitching prospects than I do of Leiter. And that's not to say that I dislike Leiter. I think he has a lot going for him. But mm-hmm. I think those kids had, in general, better bodies and overall better stuff and just project to be a little bit better than Leiter does. So, you know, I'm a little wary. I think you're spot on thinking that he could easily go to school. And, you know, maybe that is his only shot if a team takes him toward the end of the first, but kind of offers him middle first money type thing. I don't know. To be honest, I haven't looked really closely at the various bonus pool allotments, but this kid's exciting. And, you know, if he's tearing up the minors this next year, I'll be pretty happy.
For sure. And it's really cool to see how you went on the high school level. You see there's so many top tier prospects that are just all stuff. And then you look at guys like Jack Leiter and like Ghost that are just have the pitchability. And with a guy like Leiter, you just see the maturity that he has on the mound, which is just incredible for a guy his age. But as we close this podcast out, we can obviously talk about a million other prospects. Thank you, Jason, for coming on. This has been incredible. Where can people find you? And first, just to say this, you guys at Prospect Live, you guys do a ton of great work on minor league prospects. What can you tell us a little bit about that and where people can find you?
Yeah, so it's just the Twitter handle is @ProspectsLive, but the website's also just, you know, type Prospects Live into your browser and it'll come up. But yeah, it's exciting. We have kind of a blend of fantasy stuff and scouting stuff. And one of the main things we're trying to do at Prospects Live is just get guys to fields with eyeballs at live games. And that's really going to help us shape our lists. You know, if we're putting a fantasy list together, there's a good chance that one of the guys with the site has seen a player live. And in general, that's just going to help us. We're operating with a lot of information based off live looks, or if we can't get a live look, maybe video we've seen. And, you know, any piece of information that you can use to help your evaluation is just going to make it better. So this isn't a, you know, scouts versus stats kind of thing. You know, I went to school for economics and, you know, I use any piece of information I can get when I'm evaluating players. And I think that's the approach all of us use at Prospects Live. You know, we'll take into account whatever we can, and live looks are a really important piece of what we do. And, I think it's really worked for us so far. And, I hope that people out there have taken notice and, kind of seen the work we've put out. And we have a bunch of great guys. We have Ralph, who did a bunch of stuff with Razzball, and of course Lance too, and then Matt Thompson, who has done things with Friends with Fantasy Benefits, myself, Eddie Almaguer, who was formerly with Baseball Prospectus, and we have a good crew of guys, and we all work hard. We just love baseball, and we do this, you know, we do this because we're a little crazy, and we just fucking love baseball.
For sure. And honestly, just love all the stuff you do. I've seen a little bit of Ralph's work as well. Seeing Lance does a ton of great stuff. To me, Lance looks like the most projectable pitcher if he was to be in this draft. Like, that dude is like 6 foot whatever. Lean, could put on a ton of size. You guys got some projectability over there, Prospect Live. But on that note, that's a wrap for this one. MLB draft coming up June 3rd to the 5th. Lots of incredible talent going to be selected on those days. We'll see what happens. And until next time.